Welcome to the Hobby of a Lifestyle podcast, a show that looks at how our passions impact lives and drive career choices. I'm Andy Gray, a former national and world champion kickboxer. During my shows, I'll be talking with athletes, coaches, fans and more as I delve into their world to find out what inspired them on their journey. Welcome to Hobby of a Lifestyle. Thanks for joining me. This week's a real nostalgic trip down memory lane for myself. I decided to reach out to my very first rugby league coach, Mick Hogan. He was a pioneer of rugby in the Northeast. The program he set up in the 90s afforded young people like myself an opportunity to create lifetime memories. He's went on to work in rugby league, rugby union with some of the biggest clubs in the UK, and worked on a huge event such as the Rugby World Cup. Let's find out the whole story. Afternoon, Mick. Welcome to Hobby of a Lifestyle. How are you doing today?
I'm very good. Afternoon to you. Delighted to be on and I'm looking forward to it.
I'm really looking forward to it. Just so listeners know, Mick was my very first coach when I played rugby back in the day. I wasn't very good, but Mick was my coach anyway. So Mick, I'm saying there about rugby, you know, just tell people a little bit what you're up to now, what your role is within rugby now.
Yeah, so I'm now a sports consultant. I primarily work in rugby, so I've worked in rugby across the region for about 30 years. But I'm lucky enough to run a consultancy now. So I consult to Newcastle Falcons Rugby Union Club, Newcastle Thunder Rugby League Club, and I also do a bit of work with the Rugby League World Cup that will be coming to the region next year. Should have been this year, but postponed for a year. But I've previously worked on Rugby Union World Cups and done some work for the British Lions and Sale Sharks and Wigan. So a career in both codes of rugby, governing bodies, big events. So yeah, it's been good.
No, that sounds phenomenal. So if we go back to the very beginning, Nick, whereabouts did you grow up?
Yeah, so I grew up in a place called Lee, which is in the northwest of England. So that's about as rugby league as you can get.
I was just going to say,
place just outside Wigan. So, you know, at school, we had two rugby league teams. We had a football team. We had a cricket team, but no rugby union. Rugby union was, you know, it was seen as the enemy of rugby league in deepest, darkest sort of Lancashire. So never really played rugby union. And just probably like most kids, grew up playing all sports, love football, love rugby, love cricket, athletics, the lot. And from there, you know, played at a few amateur clubs across various sports, played for the school, you know, went on to sixth form. Then came up to the Northeast in 1989 to go to what was then Newcastle Poly to do the sports studies course. So I was sport mad, came up, did that course for 3 years. And that's where, you know, I really started to focus on rugby league and playing it still, but getting involved off the field as well. And that's where my sort of career in the sport was really sort of set in stone from there onwards.
I mean, how big was rugby league up in Newcastle then? Because, you know, it's very much a north kind of Yorkshire northwest sport, isn't it? And I mean, even when I was growing up and I came along, north rugby league was really new.
Yeah. No, it wasn't a big sport, and to a degree, it's still very much the smaller sort of offering to rugby union now. But you know, the Northeast is. It's sport mad, don't get me wrong, it is, but it's football mad, isn't it, really?
Yeah.
It's,
oh, yeah, massive.
I always say with the football, it's particularly Newcastle United, it's one step off a religious cult. They have built a following that is like nowhere else. You know, if you look at, you know, them and Sunderland have had a bit more success, but neither of them have had continued success. Sunderland have obviously, you know, fallen down a couple of divisions over the last sort of few years. Yeah. But Sunderland is still pulling 35,000 in. Newcastle still get 50,000 in. They've not been the most successful on the field, but they have got this incredible support, and it
ruins my weekend every weekend, Mick.
That's it. Most of the cities in history, they find that the highest part of the city, don't they? And they build a cathedral on it. In Newcastle, they didn't. They built a football stadium on it. You can see it from everywhere, can't you?
You can.
Bell tolls at 3 o'clock on a Saturday afternoon or wherever they're playing, and people stop what they're doing, they walk to, and that's their place of worship. And,
it is.
You know, sometimes they come away pretty disappointed and vowing never to go back, but they're always back there for the next home.
Every week, Mick.
It's, you know, that's what, you know, we had to contend with 30 years ago. And if you think when I started out, you know, when I finished Polytechnic at the time, I got the job as development officer back in 92, and you know, that was just before Keegan came back, and then was absolute Keegan mania, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was crazy.
It was actually a brilliant time to be in the city. It was just fantastic, because although it was something that we were always having to compete with, I've always said, you know, when football goes well in the Northeast, the whole place comes alive, and actually it makes it easier for everybody. You know, so it's not a case that football gets bigger, it affects rugby, or vice versa, football isn't as great and it makes it easy for rugby. The two are completely separate.
Yeah.
When football is going well in the Northeast, life is good. The city comes to life. The vibrancy that surrounds it is absolutely infectious. I just think the whole city does really well. So we've always had to contend with that, and it's been an interesting journey.
So what made you stay then in the Northeast, in Newcastle, when rugby league wasn't a big sport up here? You could have quite easily went back home after you qualified and pursued that down there.
I think, like everybody who comes to the Northeast, you're just absolutely blown away with what a great place it is. You know, I didn't know, I'd never been before I came in 89. I came up here and I just fell in love with the place. Helped that I met what was to become my wife at the time up here. She's not from up here, but we stayed up. It's just a brilliant place. You know, I'm from the Northwest. I'm proud to be so, but I tell everybody I'm an adopted Geordie, because I've been up here now on and off for 32 years. And I just, the people, the city, you know, the coastline, the culture, everything about it, the warmth, the friendly welcome you get, the earthiness of the people as well. They're pretty pragmatic, they're hardworking. It's all values that resonate with me and where I'm from. So stayed up here. I was lucky then to get the job as a development officer up here. So the timing was absolutely brilliant. I'd done a bit of work at when I was at the Polytechnic. I volunteered some time at Newcastle Eagles at the time. So I always remember they used to train on a Saturday morning, and I wouldn't get in till probably, like most students, 3-4 o'clock in the morning, whatever it was. And then one of the dads just happened to be driving past, who lived in the West End. That's where I was a student, and he picked me up at about 8:45. And I must have been in the right states when he picked me up. I was probably still actually drunk when he picked me up. He'd have his young son in the back. He'd give me a lift over, chat away to me, dead friendly. He knew I'd be out. And then I'd go and coach this absolute ragtag bunch of Geordie kids that didn't have a clue about, not even rugby full stop. But, you know, from that came some fantastic players, some fantastic people. Yeah. That, you know, some of those people, you know, are still friends today. And that's what sport, and in particular rugby, gives you. So
was it kind of, as you said, the sport development role came up at an ideal time in your life? Was there almost that bravado / naivety of, I'm new to the job, I know the Northeast doesn't have a rugby culture, I'm now going to take on, that's my role, I love rugby, I'm invested in this sport, and I'm just going to take this forward in the Northeast?
Very much so. It's that, I think when you've got a passion for anything, and when you know, obviously this is what this series is about, when you enjoy doing what you do, that enthusiasm, I'd like to think, rubs off on people. And I've always loved a big challenge, I really have, and I love it when people tell me that it can't be done, or this is going to be tough. It just spurs me on. So I think if you've got a love for something, and you then effectively were selling your sport, you know, I was a salesman. It's an interesting bit that I did the job for 6.5 years, from sort of late 92 all the way through to early 99. And, you know, I think development, people that develop sports fall into two categories. Most people are coaches, you know, and love coaching, love progressing as coaches. And that was never me. I'm not a great coach. I don't know the intricacies of the game too much. I can play it to a really basic standard, but I was far more interested in, how do you market the sport? How do you grow it? How do you use promotion, big events? And I've probably gone more down the management side of my career, but we follow that path. I was never a frustrated coach, but at the heart of it all is you're a salesman. You're selling a sport to new people. You're doing it off the back of a team of volunteers at amateur clubs and referees. And my mantra was really simple. You know, I get paid to do this. I'm really lucky to get paid to do it. If I want you as a volunteer that's running a team or running a club or coaching a referee, if I want you there at 9 o'clock on a Saturday morning, then guess what? I'm going to be there at 8:30 because I get paid for it. You don't have to do this. So, you know, and if I want you there till 8:30 on a Thursday night, I'll be there till 9 o'clock. So I'd like to think I put in a lot of long hours, because And to me, that's, you know, people say, when have you learned of it? I've always learned from everybody I've worked with in every position. But those early years as a development officer, I think, gave me a great grounding in how to work with people. Because when you work with volunteers, the biggest thing is they don't have to be there. They're not getting paid.
Yeah, of course.
So at site, there's a lot of encouragement you've got to give them. There's a lot of support. It's not financial support because you can't pay them because they're a volunteer. Sometimes you have to say, actually, no, you can't do that. You could do this better. So, you know, how do you take someone to task who's volunteering? And a lot of the time they'll throw out their hands in the air and say, right, if you don't want me, that's it. But you know, so you've got to do it in a certain way that you keep them on side. And I think I learned an incredible amount in that first 6.5 years and how to deal with people, you know, what makes people tick, how do you reward them, how do you recognize, how do you upskill them, that I still use today.
Yeah. So if I go back then, how did that team that you'd put together? So when I started, it was in the 90s and it was the northeast of England at the time.
Yeah.
How did that come about then? Because that wasn't just a project that ran from Gateshead Stadium. That was a northeast project where people literally came from sort of Middlesbrough, Durham, Northumberland.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, so what we had, we were trying to get schools playing, we were trying to get clubs off the back of that. So, you know, develop new clubs in Teesside, support existing clubs in Sunderland and Wallsend and Gateshead. But a number of age groups, we just didn't have enough teams. So we would just pull talented players or players that showed a bit of promise into sort of northeast teams. And, you know, we were playing against the likes of, you know, the northeast schools were playing against the likes of Wigan and Castleford and Hull. And, yeah, do you know what? We got one or two beatings, but we beat. I remember the day we beat Bradford Bulls by 34-0. You know, Bradford schools under 13s against Northeast schools under 13s. You know, there should only be one winner there. But what it showed to me, it didn't matter whether you had a Yorkshire accent, a Cumbria accent, North West, where rugby league is strong. If you give young people the opportunity and you put in place a structure of good coaching, good support, you know, and a chance to shine, doesn't matter where they're from. There are talented players in all sports, in all parts of the country.
I mean, how hard was that to pull together? Because I can still remember now, it didn't feel, although it was new, it didn't feel new. It was, I remember being away every other weekend. And like you said, you'd be down at Keithley Cougars, you'd be down at Bradford, you'd be down at Rhinos, you'd be at Wigan. And then we were going to watch Challenge Cup finals because some of the lads were being ball boys down at the old Wembley. And then we were at Manchester the next year, going to, you know, Challenge Cup fight. And I remember thinking this was always, it didn't feel new. It felt like it had been there forever. And it was obviously, it evolved from there as well. I mean, what goes into that, just getting it all said? Because that did not seem like it was kind of just something that had been thrown together.
It was a lot of setting the structure right. And it's something that I've always tried to do throughout everything that we've done community wise. And look, those early years in development, I've kept that theme going wherever I've gone. So at every club, we've always had a strong community core to what we do. But one of the principles that we have with that is quality. Is it has to be a quality offering, because there's so much for people to do now. And if it isn't quality and it isn't, you know, as good as it can be, people will go off elsewhere. So, you know, putting a lot of time and effort into making sure that not just the coaching was right, but the support structures around, you know, just getting a bit of kit to players, that the transport that you went on, the events you went to, the communication you had with people.
It was events.
And this is pre-internet days and pre-email. Nobody knew what an email was. Yeah.
You know, I remember kind of, we were really fortunate. I think it certainly is a young person going in there, maybe 12, 13-year-old, and saying, I train at Gateshead Stadium every single week.
Yeah.
I've had an opportunity to play on Gateshead Stadium. You know, this is where it's hosting international events, where you've got Olympians training and everything. And then obviously playing some of our games there, playing down Framwellgate Moor at the time as well. And then all of a sudden, you're kitted out your fully sponsored Puma gear. And then watching the transition from Northeast to Gateshead Thunder. I mean, how much involvement did you have of getting Gateshead Thunder set up here in the Northeast?
Yeah, well, when we proved ourselves over the first 3 or 4 years, and look, the perhaps the bit I haven't got, and hopefully it's come through, it's a multi-partner approach. You know, we identified a lot of really good school teachers that gave up the time. You know, your likes of Colin Mackay at Western Middle and Paul Meehan, who was down
Paul
at
Meehan, yeah, yeah.
Well, These were just incredible.
Yeah, they were.
Incredible. But we, Malcolm Jacobs at Adrian Park, you know, there were...
That was my teacher, Crosta Jacobs, so that was my teacher. Yeah. That's how I got involved.
What a guy. You know, we couldn't have done it without these people.
Yeah.
We couldn't have done it without Gateshead Council hosting us, putting money in behind it. You know, and it's the relationships you then get with all the people at the stadium because, you know, ultimately you're constantly asking them for access and for favours. And my view is, look, if you get on with these people and you understand the challenges that they're facing, then they're going to help you even more. So I would help out on athletics events. It wasn't my job. I would help out on cross-country because when people saw you and the other rugby league people helping out, they were far more likely to give back. So we had good support at Sports Council, the rugby league. We got 3 or 4 years of proving that what I said earlier, it doesn't matter where your accent's from, there's talented rugby and rugby league players everywhere. And when people saw that we were having the success, they started putting more and more resources in. So we made an application then to become the first non-professional academy. Anyway, because we had a great group that you were involved with and others either side of you were coming through, they were getting to 16. Right? Now, if you're in Wigan, you went on to Wigan Academy or any of the other... It stopped at 16 up here. So the next progression then was to have an academy team. And we put the case forward, we funded it, and you know, we then got an academy manager and Dave Mallon appointed. So more and more resource went into it. It was just the next natural transition. And again, from that, even more players. If you can see that sort of journey that you can go on as a player all the way through to becoming a professional, now look, most people aren't going to make that. Nah. But if it's a possibility, people stick in the sport, and that's what happened.
I think just from my personal point of view was being involved with it from being the Northeast, then watching the transition into Gateshead Thunder was night and day. You know, Northeast was fantastic. It was great. I think being able to see you represent the Northeast of England at a sport was fantastic, and the opportunities it provided us as young people. But then to see all of a sudden now you're playing for a professional team, which, even if the junior ranks, and all of a sudden you're wearing the same kit as the professionals wear. You've got Sean McRae coming down to deliver some training every now and then. It was just the opportunity is, you know, and they're things that have stayed with me personally, but regardless of whether or not I was good enough to ever make it, it was the experience that I got from that was phenomenal. And as I say, it was night and day going from all of a sudden just representing the Northeast team with maybe nowhere to go to all of a sudden. We went up there, was it Duke's House Wood and Hexham as well? And there was guys coming in from Salford and training and the training was just crazy. And then we were having award ceremonies where the Bradford Bulls were coming up with a trophy and, you know, them experiences they've stayed with me forever, and I know they'll stay with me. And that transition was just phenomenal. I mean, when you see, and I know you're saying it's a group collective, and that's how it's progressed. But being involved from the start and having that passion, it's your little baby that you've just seen grow to become a Super League team. I mean, how does that make you feel to go from this little project, which is all escalating, and is now a Super League team playing?
Yeah, it was fantastic. And I think with anybody in life, if you're involved in anything, whether that's personally as a sportsman or a sportswoman, or you're involved in a bigger project or a team, if you can see improvement every year and you can see it's not about success every year, but you know that you are moving towards where you want to go to, it just, your enthusiasm just snowballs, doesn't it? And your motivation does as well. It's when perhaps you stall or there are too many obstacles in the way, or you actually feel it's going backwards. That's when you start to question why you're involved. And again, I think because of the quality of people that we got involved with, you know, the enthusiasm of them, the skills of them, we just seemed to pull everybody in the right direction. And it just got bigger and bigger, and there was a bit more success year and year. Then we started to get international games at the stadium and professional games. That's all, you know. My people ask, how do you grow a sport? I mean, I'm no expert on it, but if you want to grow a sport in any region or any part of the world, there are two things you need. There are two approaches you can take. Is it grassroots up? So do you do a lot of community coaching, get a lot of people interested and go with them on the journey up? Or is it top down where you put big events on and that hopes to inspire people? Well, actually, I think it's both. You've got to do both side by side when young people like yourself that were there at the time can see big things happening and big games coming and access to trophies and players, and you know, that inspires people. But you've got to underpin it with a lot of, you know, hard work at the grassroots level, building it up. And what will happen is the two will meet in the middle, and that's how you grow a sport. And that's, you know, that's always been my thinking from 30 years ago. And it's what we're doing here today now at the at the Falcons and the Thunder. You know, we've had a really good track record over the last 6 years in attracting big events at St. James's Park, whether that's rugby union World Cups, rugby league World Cups, Fulton games going there, Magic Weekend, England internationals. We've been at the centre of bringing all those games, you know, and it's, you know, to see 50,000 people in St. James's Park year after year watching rugby, I don't think I'd ever thought I'd see. But you do that, and we do the community work that we're doing. It's a generational project, but you get some success with it.
No, it is. It's absolutely phenomenal. I mean, the fact that you're now involved with the Falcons and the Thunder, and obviously Newcastle Thunder, what I suppose that's become because Gateshead left in the merger with Hull. Was that right at the time? They kind of...
Yeah, so back in 99, Gateshead had one season, had a great year on the field, just missed out on the playoffs by a point, but never got the funding the other clubs got. You know, it's perhaps one of the criticisms of rugby league. It doesn't have the money to properly, you know, turbocharge a sport in a new area. Had to merge with Hull, which is difficult. Moved down to Hull. It reformed at the lower levels. Had, you know, on and off years, but built to 2008 when it got promoted to the next level up. And what was fantastic to see there was, you know, guys and people involved at that club like Keith Christie. You know, Keith's a really good friend of mine. Well, I first met Keith when I was a development officer, and he was this very mouthy 15, 16-year-old rugby league player from Wall's End, you know, and it's great to think that, yes, we've developed a load of players that have gone on to play professionally and even internationally from the region, but we've also developed some absolutely phenomenal administrators as well. Keith kept that club going for years and years. He's still a director of the club today, and he was instrumental in bringing the Thunder over from Gateshead in 2014, at the end of 2014, over to the... over to Newcastle. So it's now owned by Newcastle Rugby Limited, that own Newcastle Falcons, plays its games here at Kingston Park. We've had great success in growing the crowds and the community game underneath it. And we're now in the Championship, so we're one level below Super League. And we've got a stated aim to win Super League by 2030. So in 9 years' time, I want to be standing here talking to you saying, right, in a few weeks, we're going to Old Trafford for the Grand Final, we're going to win it. Now, when I say that, people look at me and first of all, they check whether I've been drinking or not, because... Most of Super League hasn't won Super League. You know, Warrington haven't won it, Hull haven't won it, and they've been around for 100-odd years. But, you know, we've got a lot of the component parts in place. We've got a great stadium, a good coaching team, a great administration, a fantastic owner in Seymour Kurdi. And it's not going to be easy, but we think we can get our... We've established ourselves in the Championship now, so we got promoted this in the close season. We've had a good year. We'll finish mid-table. A lot of people expect us to go straight back down. We'll push for playoffs next year, and hopefully by the year after, we can start challenging to get up into Super League. And when you're in there, we just think with what we've got in place now and the juniors that are coming through, again, we've re-established the academy. It is, you know, producing some fantastic results. And, again, get all these things in place, get the right partners, the right sponsors, the local authority, the rugby league buying into it, the big games at St. James's Park.
They are huge, as you say, they're huge events. They must just be... just feeders for the local clubs and just for the sport in general, even from a participation point of view and a spectator point of view. That is, you know, like you say, 50,000 people at an event on a weekend is phenomenal.
Well, it's working, because what we've got now, the Northeast is the fastest growing area in the country for rugby league. You know, we've over 1,500 registered players, which it's never had. And you look at it over the last sort of 5-6 years, I think participation is up 40-odd%, which is like nowhere else in the country. Yeah. A lot of sports in most areas of the country have stayed flat or even gone backwards. We've actually this year had bigger numbers playing the summer than we did just before COVID, which is incredible.
Yeah, right?
So there's lots of positives. Don't get me wrong, we are still some way off where we want to be. But again, we'll go back to 30 years ago and you look at those principles of how you grow a sport. It was a different time, a different era, but get the right people involved, get everybody working to sort of a clear purpose and a clear vision, and you can achieve a bit.
I mean, when you've seen Gateshead Thunder leave and Major Hull and that kind of, what did that do for rugby league in the Northeast? Was that a case, was there ever any point where you just thought, I don't think I've got it in me again to help build this sport back up in the Northeast? Or was it a very much a case of, it's a bit disheartening, but I want to grow again?
I probably pulled away from just through career, really. So back in 99, when it moved to Hull, I had the chance to go down to Hull, but you know, myself and my wife at the time wanted to stay up here. She had a great job up here. So I moved to Newcastle Falcons then back in late 99. So it was still an involvement in rugby. I kept my involvement in rugby league going because I carried on playing. I'd have been about 30 then, and you know, I was just playing for the love of it. I was never any good really, but just involved where I could be. I've had years, you know, I've moved away a couple of times. So I went down to work with for Premiership Rugby, which runs the professional game and club game in England. I did a couple of years down in the Midlands and London, and then back in 2008, I went down to work for Wigan for a couple of years, and then on to Sale for a couple of years. So I have moved out the region a couple of times, but I always come back. I always seem to find a way back. I'll tell you, on both occasions, as soon as I went, I thought, you know, I'm going to miss this place. And I always knew I'd come back. So I've come back, and it was great to come back to the Falcons sort of back in late 2013.
Yeah.
Speak to the owner. At the time, then he said, look, I've got one eye on the rugby league, and I know you can do stuff for me on the rugby union, but let's keep an eye on the rugby league as well. I'd love to grow that. So that's what brought me back, and here we are now.
So maybe it's going away is kind of just whet your appetite for a bit and give you that opportunity just to let things settle and then rediscover your love for it, I suppose, a little bit again.
It's not just that, it's upskill yourself as well, because you go to a club, you know, I was lucky enough to spend a couple of years at Wigan and work there, and you see how big that sport is in that part of the world, and you see how well Wigan run it, and it just gives you then sort of a lot of experiences that you want to bring back, and a lot of transferable skills and you know, goals that you can take away from Wigan. Now, Wigan's different. We can never replicate a Wigan up here, but we can take a lot of those principles and try and instill them up here. That's what we're trying to do.
It's phenomenal. I mean, how do you even begin then? Is it just through all your experience, all the different jobs that you've had, to be asked to put on these mega events that you're putting on?
Yeah, again, I've met a lot of great people over the years, and every single time that I, you know, speak to people, I try and take something away and try and learn something. And there's not many new ideas out there, but there's a lot of ideas that can be tweaked and made work for you. So the event side is something that I'll go back to when we put a World Cup game on at Gateshead back in 1995, a Rugby World Cup game, and we put England internationals on. That's a side that I've always loved and I've always spent a lot of time on. And then when you count up over the years, being involved at the Falcons and at Wigan at Thunder, I've probably put on about 400 professional rugby league games. I've all been involved. So like anything in life, you know yourself in your training, you start to do things over and over. Yeah. And that repetition and that constant analysis you're getting from others about how you just improve by minimal each time, before you know it, I'm not saying you're doing things in your sleep, but things become a lot easier to you. As long as you've got that mindset that I'm competent in this now, I know what I'm doing, but I want to improve. And the day you stop wanting to improve or stop wanting to learn, is you might as well you've been left behind.
I mean, you come at everything you're saying, it's fantastic, and you come across really humble about it. And you know, you are saying about all the people that you've been involved, but you must just sit back, you know, and look and go, 50,000 people at St. James's Park this weekend. I did that. I know it was a group collective, but this is something that you've started in the Northeast, and look where it is now. You must sometimes, do you ever just sit back and take time to reflect and go, wow, okay.
The biggest time I took to reflect, and it was great. So, you know, the passion's always been there to bring big events to the Northeast. And one of my, you know, when I was at the Falcons, when I came back to the Falcons this time, we got the opportunity back in 2016 to bid to host the European Cup final. It had never moved outside of the main stadium. So Twickenham, Murrayfield, Aviva Park, and the, what is the Principality in Wales, and the one in France. It had just been rotated across them. And the European organisers then said, actually, do you know what? We're going to start to take it to new venues, new territory. So they let people bid. So we got together a team to bid for it. It was the rugby club, it was the football club, we needed their venue, City Council, NGI, you know, Newcastle Gateshead Initiative, anyone, so all the main partners in the city. And we put a bid in to host the European final actually in 2018. Now, we didn't get 2018, but we got given it for 2019. Yeah. So it's the first time it had ever been played in England outside of Twickenham.
Yeah.
Went to Bilbao the year before in Spain, which was fantastic. We went over there and saw what they did well, which was a lot, you know, brought those principles back. And what we ended up with was the fastest selling final ever. It sold out quicker than any other final. And we got a record UK attendance. So you bid for two finals. There's a Challenge Cup, which is a second tier one on the Friday night, and the main Champions Cup on the Saturday. So the Challenge Cup on the Friday night, we ended up with two French teams,
right?
Which was fantastic for on the field, but between them, they brought less than 700 supporters.
Right. Yeah.
So you could see it was going to end up with two French teams. So, you know, that was it. But we still got more than 28,000 tickets sold, which is by far and away the biggest UK attendance for two French teams. And then the next day, we ended up with 52,000 sellout for what was one of the greatest games I've seen, Saracens and Leinster. And yeah, I'll admit, you know, as about a minute before they walked out, you're running around on the day, you're running around from 2 years before.
Yeah.
I just took a moment and went, do you know what? This is what the team have achieved. And it was fantastic. And just to look around the stadium and see absolutely packed St. James's Park, that atmosphere that you can't measure, but it was just off the scale. It was just a brilliant day. It really was.
Yeah. It's a phenomenal achievement. Phenomenal achievement, isn't it? I mean, so what's next for you then, moving forward within rugby?
Well, I work part time at both the Falcons and the Thunder. So at the Falcons, I'm executive director. I work on special one off projects and the commercial side of the club. The Thunder, I'm fortunate to be chairman of the Thunder. And the other role I do, which is a voluntary role, but one I love so much, is I'm chair of our foundation, which is our community project. So it's the biggest, I think, rugby foundation in the country. We've got 18 full-time members of staff. It's it costs about $600,000 a year to run, which we've got a brilliant team underneath. I'm chair. I've got a fantastic board of trustees, and that's just about, it's the same principles as it was 30 years ago. Yeah. Giving people an opportunity to get involved in rugby league or rugby union, whether it's touch rugby, walking rugby, rugby fitness, and then rugby attached to lots of educational bits, health bits, social inclusion. It's just about using rugby for the power of good and getting people involved and enjoying the sport. And do you know what? Maybe having a positive impact on a few lives, because some of the people that we work with have, you know, they're down on the luck and they've not had a great opportunity in life. And hopefully through some of the projects we run, we can either get them back on track or we can give them a leg up. And that to me is really powerful. And then I work on the Rugby League World Cup, which will now take place 12 months later. It kicks off in Newcastle at St. James's Park next year on the 15th of October. We should, all things being well, have three more games at Kingston Park and then another game down at Middlesbrough, which would be fantastic. So five games for the region, working on that, making sure we sell as many tickets as possible. Big festivals around it, the fan zones that will run next to all those. So all that big event stuff, but always linking it back to community and how can we use the big event to inspire people and get more people involved in rugby league or rugby union.
No, that's phenomenal. And what would your one piece of advice be to somebody then, if they want to maybe follow the same route as you down the sport development and events management, or if it was just in general, really?
The one piece of advice I give to everybody who wants to get into sport or whatever it is have that curiosity about it. You know, don't, by curiosity, I mean, ask questions, ask loads of questions, and don't think that by asking questions, you're going to come across as weak or not knowledgeable. Is none of us know it all. In fact, most of us know very little, really, when you weigh up the world. Yeah. And I've always asked lots of questions. I've always tried to make sure that, you know, everybody who's involved has a say in what we do and can have a big input. And the more you ask questions and then listen, rather than just talk, which is quite ironic because I seem to have talked a hell of a lot on this, but I assume that's...
It's your story, though. Of course, it's your story.
But it's to listen and you'll uncover some fascinating things that you'll learn about people, about situations, about how to deal with things. And to me,
personally,
I love curious people. I love people that ask the questions that, you know, bother to get in touch. And look, if you're looking to get involved with sport, right, get yourself volunteering, get yourself put forward, even if it's a community club level, because And, it, you know, I've employed a few people in my time in my various roles, and I look at CVs and I've come across some fantastic ones. And the bit I always look at, I probably don't really look at your education. I have to, but I'll just check it, but it doesn't sell it for me.
Yeah.
I look a bit more at probably what you've done in a previous job, but my bit that I always look at is, what has this person done, really, that shows that they really want to get involved in sport? And that might be volunteering, it might be a course they've put themselves on. So those bits where they've tried to learn, they've been a bit curious, that's the bit that really inspires me and probably makes them stand out. So if you want to get involved, but even if it's just connecting with somebody on LinkedIn and saying, can I catch up with you for half an hour? Can I ask you a few questions about sport and how to break into it, all this? You'll find in sport, probably as in most sectors, we're really welcoming. We love talking about what we're doing. I've been helped by so many people over the years that if I can give up half an hour here and there to somebody trying to break into sport, it is the very, very least I can do.
Oh, that's fantastic. Well, Mick, thank you so much for your time today for coming on the podcast. I really appreciate it. Lovely to connect with you again.
Andy, brilliant to catch up with you again, and well done on everything you've achieved as well. And
thank you.
What a great concept for a podcast, and good luck to you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for listening to another episode of Hobby of a Lifestyle. Stay safe, stay well, and we'll see you next time.